Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. News.
The Czech GDP has dropped to an all-time historic low. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is due to visit the Czech Republic in August. And the Czech police have arrested a 19-year-old programmer who operated an illegal drugs, porn and weapons social network. The Czech GDP fell by 10.7% year-on-year and by 8.4% compared to the previous quarter, the Czech Statistics Office reported on Friday. The drop, which is ascribed to restrictions stemming from the coronavirus pandemic, is the steepest economic decline in the country's modern history. Prime Minister Andrej Babiš said in response to the news that the drop was expected and the next results would be better. He said he was certain Czech companies and entrepreneurs would be flexible and would adapt to the circumstances caused by the pandemic. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is due to visit the Czech Republic on August 11th and 12th, the news site Lidovky.cz reported. According to the website, Mr. Pompeo is scheduled to meet with Prime Minister Andrej Babiš. The two politicians are expected to discuss the security of 5G mobile networks. Last May, the U.S. Secretary of State and the head of the Czech government approved a joint declaration committing to find reliable, trustworthy suppliers for 5G mobile networks. Mr. Pompeo's visit, which hasn't yet been confirmed by Czech officials, is also expected to mark the 75th anniversary of the liberation of West Bohemia by U.S. troops in 1945. According to Lidovky.cz, the U.S. Secretary of State is also due to visit Austria, Slovenia and Poland in August. The Czech police have arrested a 19-year-old programmer from the Czech Republic whom they suspect of creating and operating a large social network dealing with illegal drugs, Czech television reported. The social network operated both in the darknet environment and in the public area. The site focused mainly on the Danish market, and in addition to illegal substances, it dealt with weapons and pornographic material. Over 450,000 people are believed to have used it. The young man has been extradited to Denmark, where he will stand trial. The flagship carrier Czech Railways has started laying off employees due to the coronavirus crisis. Over 140 pilots and cabin crew employees were handed their notice on Friday. In what is merely the first wave of layoffs, altogether Czech Airlines is planning to axe over 300 jobs between now and February of 2021. Some have been given the choice between a two-month notice and a year's unpaid leave when the management would reassess their position in the company. The number of confirmed COVID-19 positive cases dropped slightly on Thursday to 252, down from 270 and more in the previous days, the Czech Health Ministry reported. The overall number of COVID-19 positive cases has now crossed 16,300. 379 people have died. The growing numbers are due to several local outbreaks of the coronavirus, one of them in the Czech capital. The authorities are monitoring the situation closely and say stricter measures will be introduced if the situation worsens. In Prague, face masks are now compulsory in the metro and in pharmacies and medical institutions. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Saturday should be bright, clear and dry around the country with day temperatures between 28 and 33 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová and that's the end of the news.
Hi there, listener. This is Radio Prague International and I'm Ian Willoughby. Today, world-famous Czech writer Milan Kundera donates his book collection to a library in his native Brno. A new plan to combat suicide in the Czech Republic following a spike in people taking their own lives during the coronavirus crisis. And later, we meet Jan Rubeš. He taught Mick Jagger to speak a little Czech ahead of a huge Rolling Stones concert in Prague in the summer of 1990. All that's coming up in today's program. The celebrated Czech-born writer Milan Kundera, author of The Unbearable Lightness of Being and other acclaimed books, has decided to donate his private library and archive to the Moravian Library in his native city of Brno. The extensive collection will be moved to the Czech Republic from his Paris flat in the autumn, and after being catalogued, will be available to the public. Ruth Frankova discussed the news with literary scientist and director of the Moravian Library in Brno, Tomáš Kubíček, and asked him how Milan Kundera's decision had come about.
It's a result of many years' cooperation and friendship. Last year, we, it means Milan, Vera, Kundera and I, prepared an exhibition about Kundera's novel and essay. Then it was published a catalog to this exhibition by the Moravian Library. And after that, it was published also a book in French and Czech language with title Milan Kundera in translation. And during the process of this collaboration, we started to speak about the donation of Kundera's library to Moravian Library. And here we are.
So what does this decision say about Kundera's relationship to his home country, or to be more precise, to his hometown of Brno?
From my point of view, it's quite clear. You can read it as a symbol. It shows that Milan Kundera has deep roots, not only in Czech lands, but especially in Brno. And I think that it is a message about returning to his hometown.
Apart from Kundera's books and translations, what else will the collection that he's donating to your library include?
The collection includes books that have been published worldwide in more than 40 languages, in more than 4,000 editions. Very important part of this donation is the archive. It contains articles from newspapers, reviews, criticism. Then you can find here Milan Kundera's drawings, photographs, small texts, and so on. In effect, what all is the content of this collection, it will be clear when we will do an inventory of this material.
So when will the collection be available to the public, and will it be available only to researchers, or will the public have access to it as well?
No, it will be accessible. We, it means Milan Kundera, Vera Kundera and I, have a plan to move the library to Brno this autumn. But it depends on the situation with Corona. And then we will realize a simple inventory. It takes about 4 months. And after this inventory, it will be followed by library cataloging. If everything goes according to our ideas, then at the end of the next year, the collection will be available to readers.
And I believe you actually dedicated a special section of your library exclusively to Milan Kundera's collection. Is that so?
Yes, that's true. We are planning to set up a special reading room for Kundera's collection. However, it will be not only a reading room, but also a place for readers' discussions, readings, meetings with Czech and foreign authors, exactly as it corresponds to Kundera's world importance.
And that was Tomáš Kubíček, director of the Moravian Library in Brno. On average, more than 1,300 Czechs take their own lives every year. While the suicide rate has been dropping steadily since the 1970s, there are signs the coronavirus crisis has led to a spike. Against that backdrop, the Government Council for Mental Health has approved a comprehensive suicide prevention plan, as Brian Kennedy reports.
The government's suicide prevention plan follows on the heels of a mental health study carried out in May, when measures to combat the spread of coronavirus led to businesses, schools, and universities closing and increased isolation throughout society. In any given year since 1989, suicide is the second most common cause of death among Czechs aged 15 to 24. Martin, a 23-year-old university student who fell into a dangerous depression, described his mental state during the lockdown to Czech Radio.
In the beginning, it wasn't clear to me what was going to happen. I thought the pandemic would be short-lived. Because of the quarantine, I wasn't even allowed to go to work or school. That destroyed my daily routine. I started going to bed later, couldn't sleep at night, was afraid and anxious, and had dark thoughts. I had no energy left to do anything.
Over the past couple of months, about a third of calls to the 1212 crisis hotline concerned mental health issues. The number of such calls even tripled on the crisis hotline, especially for senior citizens, says Katarzyna Bohata, head of the Elpida Senior Center.
People were reporting their mental health had deteriorated significantly. They had psychological problems, sleep disorders. That's why some people turned to alcohol.
According to the latest figures of the World Health Organization, the suicide rate in the Czech Republic is just below the EU average on a per capita basis and in the bottom third globally. Alexander Kasal, coordinator of the National Suicide Prevention Plan, says the new prevention plan aims to reduce Czech suicides by 30% over the next decade. To do so, he says, it is especially important that teachers and general practitioners can recognize when someone is at risk.
Pharmacists are another important partner in preventing suicide. They can intervene if they recognize certain warning signs and if someone orders a large amount of a drug that can be misused.
Intentional overdoses are among the most common suicide methods. The new prevention plan also anticipates better protection for rail lines, Mr. Castle says.
Prevention is based on building barriers. In addition, more signs with contacts for crisis lines are being installed at the railways. These could encourage people who are not yet completely committed to suicide get help.
There are now only 5 state mental health crisis centers in the Czech Republic. The plan is to open at least one in each of the country's 14 regions. So says Marie Salmanova of the aid organization Nemipust Duši, which focuses on incorporating mental health education into Czech schools.
Help must be more accessible and the crisis centers must remain open. There are currently 2 centers in Prague, 1 in Brno, 1 in Ostrava and 1 in Trutnov. Every one of them closed their inpatient sections during the coronavirus crisis.
The Government Council for Mental Health, led by Prime Minister Andrej Babiš, will oversee the new suicide prevention plan to ensure cooperation among various ministries. The state plans to invest a total of 800 million crowns into the measures in the short term.
Thank you for that report, Brian Kennedy. Now in the final part of our programme today, our guest is Jan Rubeš, who I spoke to late last year, just ahead of the 30th anniversary of the beginning of the Velvet Revolution.
Hi, I'm Mick Jagger.
Czechoslovakia's newfound freedom was underlined in August 1990 by a concert at Prague's Strahov Stadium by the Rolling Stones, who became the first major Western band to perform in the country. In a now famous video message broadcast before the gig, Mick Jagger told fans in Czech, "The Stones are rolling to Prague." The man who taught the rock star that phrase was Jan Rubeš. A Czechoslovak TV employee in those years, he later brought shows such as Dallas and The Simpsons to the country's TV screens. When I spoke to Rubeš, who now works in film and TV distribution, I asked what he'd been doing this time 30 years ago.
I used to work in Czechoslovak television as a production manager in music department, which was, in those days, it was quite free department. I don't think there was too many members of Communist Party even in this department. We did a classical music, we did a concerts, etc. And because that was already time when things start slowly changing, perestroika in Russia. And so I started to study documentary also directing as a postgraduate studying in film academy. And so I slowly dreaming to be film director or TV director, TV documents. So slowly I preparing for this career.
For your generation, I think your English is unusually good. Where did you get your English?
My sister got married in the United States in 1967. This year is very important because it was before Russian invasion, and she legally married. So that time, communists still let me go to visit my sister. There was some deal between Czech Republic and Czechoslovakia in that time, and U.S. that the families could visit each other, so that I don't have need to all bizarre permission. She always sent me invitation. Then, of course, the communists has to approve that I can go.
How old were you when the revolution happened here, and what are your strongest memories at that time?
I was born in 1955, so 89, I was 30-something. It was like a dream. I just got from Czech television the tape from the DVD, because part of the movement, well, was in Czech television, so-called garage. In Czech TV, garages where OB vans were parking. The Monday after 17th, because it was Friday, I think, and on Monday, the employees go to garages. And on Tuesday, there was another meeting, and we declare we want a new system, new democracy, etc. And in one moment, I was thinking that what is important, because people was already, I think, on Wenceslas Square. And so I said, hey, we are talking here, but we should go with our OB vans to do the live transmission from Wenceslas Square. And I can play you the tape. And it was incredible that starts a new discussion. Yes, shall we do that? And the technical director from those days, he said, come on, you never asked for this. And then started the discussion. So it was quite one of the 1,000 points happened, the cases, which was quite interesting.
The main reason, Jan, I wanted to speak to you was because the Rolling Stones famously played here in Prague at Strahov Stadium in the summer of 1990. And I guess it was the first major international touring band who came here of that size. Before the Rolling Stones came to Prague, there was a famous video made in which Mick Jagger says, Kameni se vali do Prahy, the Stones are rolling to Prague. You coached Mick Jagger to say that. How did the situation come about, Jan?
It was funny because I told you I was trying to be documentary director, and because of my English, the team, the scouts who trying to find where the concert should be, etc., they asked me if I can walk, and with the team who preparing the concert on the Czech side asked me to join them when they searching for the place. We went to the Strahov Stadium, which was the biggest place where concert could be, and finally said, yes, we will do that here. And then I just sat in front of the one promoter or one guy from the Rolling Stone team. I said, well, it might be a problem because, you know, we live behind the Iron Curtain and nobody knows nothing about the Rolling Stones. But if you let me to do the documentary before the concert, I work in Czech television, Czechoslovak television, we will play the documentary, and it would help to sell the tickets. And they were a little bit nervous if it's true or not. And I said, okay, so send us the questions, and maybe it might be possible because we're touring. We have one concert before in Vienna, so maybe we can invite you. So that starts the process that we send in questions back and forth, and they always said, no, you can't ask this, you should ask this and that. And on the end, they finally agree that we can come to Vienna and record, make the documentary, I would say, about preparing the concerts and interview Mick Jagger and Keith Richards. And another part of the story was that in that time, my wife escaped with my sweet kids to her new boyfriend in the US. And I was alone, and she loves the Rolling Stones. So I was dreaming that if I make the Rolling Stones interview and she will send her the tape, she will return. She does.
I presume for you it was a big thing meeting Mick Jagger and Keith Richards, members of one of the biggest bands of all time.
Yes, it was. It was. How to start? Because it was really very bizarre, the interviews, because they said we really must send in those days by fax all the questions, and they always complain. And for instance, I have one question: how is it possible that Mick Jagger can work with Keith Richards if they are such so different personality? Mick Jagger is jogging, not smoking, and not drinking, and Keith Richard, and the answer was, that's not a good question because they are same. And when we interview Keith Richard, the first thing they bring on a table was pack of cigarettes and bottle of bourbon. So they really wasn't same. And then it was amazing when they came, because it was the interview we did happened in Vienna in a hotel, and they came and said, ask what you want. So we were approved.
Mick Jagger is often seen, as you say, as the kind of straight one in the group. Keith Richards is the personification of rock and roll. Did either of them make a greater impression on you, or how do they seem to you as people?
Wonderful. I don't know how to describe it, because we were so nervous. I think that they were also a little bit nervous, because we were strange people from different countries. They have no idea where they're going. As I said on the beginning, they maybe was afraid that not many people will come. But the concert was, of course, was sold immediately, and it was an incredible success.
Footage from that interview process is on YouTube. How do you feel today looking back at that film?
Well, I think it was really top, creative top of my life. As a director, I didn't make many things. It was before I did a documentary like reportage when Frank Zappa came to Prague. It was in January 1990. He came from Moscow, so it's another film with, for me, celebrity.
Was that the time when Havel or Havel's people famously asked Zappa to be some kind of representative or roving ambassador or something like that?
I wasn't there. I know there was this discussion. Maybe it happened later, because I know something like this happened. But, you know, Václav Havel was great and very friendly. So maybe, because he loved Frank Zappa, of course, he said, well, you are the one. But on the other hand, as a representative, I remember one of my questions to Frank Zappa was that I knew that there is no Ministry of Culture in the United States. And I said, hey, we have, because we also introduced Zappa to our Minister of Culture. And I said, hey, Frank, do you have in the United States Minister of Culture in the government? And he said, no, if we have Minister of Culture, it will be Minister of Junk because we have no culture. He was very straight in thinking.
Tell us about the actual concert of the Rolling Stones, where you had over 100,000 people at Strahov. The biggest event ever of its kind at that time in this country.
Yeah, I think so. Another story is connected with this, because the day before the concert, they called me, again, the guys who I know, and they said, hey, did you ever speak in front of 100,000 people? I said, no, but I have no problem to do that. I said, okay, so come to Strahov, we get you a special pass, and you get there. And so I said, what shall I do? And they asked me they gave me a microphone before the concert, and they said, you should introduce where is the emergency exits, and you can say something about, you can't say Rolling Stones, the band before was Vladimir Mishik. And said, you only can mention Vladimir Mishik, but you can't say Mick Jagger, you can't say Rolling Stone, you should say where's the exit. So that's what I said in Czech, in front of 100,000 people. Nobody seen me. I was so small.
What goes through your mind when you're standing in front of all that huge crowd?
Honestly, I don't remember if I was just on the side of the stage. So I see the crowd, but I was nervous a little bit.
After this, what were you doing in your work, say, for example, in the 1990s?
Well, because things changed in Czech television, because my background was production. Finally, the general manager of Czech television, Ivo Matej, was also a production guy. So I think that because we have training to organize the things, and Czech television has to be totally reorganized, we have to fire so many people because overemployment was there. It was really terrible institution, bureaucratic. Communist, and now people saying that Czech television is bureaucratic. It's wonderful, clear institution, but those days was terrible. So it was quite unique interesting that mostly in a management was the people from production background. And I started with my colleagues. We work in the music department as a head of music department. And in 92, I think, came Ivo Matte because he noticed that I speak some of English. And he said, I need somebody for foreign acquisitions. And I said, Ivo, no, I'm dreaming about my career as a documentary director and I want to do this. And he said, okay, take it for 1 year and then you can do what you want. I need somebody now. So I agree and then I get stuck here for 15, 20 years.
And say, for example, in the 90s, how did it work with the acquisition of films, for example, from the West? That must have been a whole new ball game for you guys.
It was very interesting in the beginning because in those days there was only one television. There was no commercial TV. So my first TV markets in MIPCOM, MIPTV, we were only one and everybody wants to sell us the program. So we felt wonderful. Then came the commercial TV and time starts to be more difficult. But of course, because Czech television is still different compared to commercial station, but we still buying, let's say, art movies, interesting series. So they always need us. So it was interesting. But when I came first time to the market and I see what is available now, I can't believe how the people in the communist regime could go to this market and see all the great movies, TV series, which were available and they can't buy it because we start to broadcast Dallas. Czech television is a public broadcast because there was no commercial station. Start with Dallas also. And it was so funny story, so many new things. And one story I must mention because it was 91 or 92, there was an ABC program called Beatles Anthology. Wonderful, wonderful documentary about, series documentary about the Beatles. And we acquired this, and then I got a phone call from US, and they said, hey, do you want a censored version or uncensored version? And I said, hey, lady, you're calling to Czech Republic. We are after revolution. We have no censorship in this country. So send me the uncensored version. But by the way, how looks the censored version? And she said, well, there is Yoko Ono and John Lennon, the LP, where they are naked. We can't use it in US. I said, send it to me. We broadcast it with this.
That was Jan Rubeš, father, of course, of Janek Rubeš, who I interviewed in October last year. And I'm afraid that's all we have time for today on Radio Prague International. From me, Ian Willoughby, thank you very much indeed for listening and speak to you again very soon.